Good afternoon. It's very nice to be here with you all. I am not an experienced teacher. I tell everybody that I taught for 1 year, which was just long enough to figure out that I have an undying respect for anybody crazy enough to try it. So, I wrote this piece a few years back as sort of a tribute to teachers, and I actually shared it at WFTI several years ago. So if this sounds like a repeat, you may officially chalk yourself up as an old person because you heard this before, but it's been a few years. I titled it originally, What Parents Want from Teachers. I think the title, The Perfect Teacher, fits just as well. What parents want from teachers is really quite simple. We just want my child to be the center of the universe. Nothing complicated about that, right? Now, if you allow me a little tongue-in-cheek fun here, I'll tell you what that looks like. And under the fun, there's a subtle point. See if you can catch it. If you are a teacher from another community, the new community should become your new home. It should be the best place on earth you've ever been, and how soon can I move my membership here? This should be the nicest group of people you've ever been around, and where have you been all my life? The schoolhouse should become your permanent residence. Ideally, no one would ever see you outside the school property except perhaps for your grandmother's funeral. We want the school to be your environment, your habitat, your heaven. You never go anywhere else except it. You never go anywhere else because it never occurred to you that you would want to be anywhere else. Everything you've ever wanted in life is fulfilled by being buried in your books at school. We want the children to be like your own. Each one of them is fascinating in every detail. Not one of them gets under your skin. Each of them has something unique that you prize, and you are constantly praising them for their amazing abilities and not noticing their shortcomings in the least. They are constantly surrounding you. The younger ones adore you. The older ones reverence you. You are constantly involved with them. On the rare occasions you leave the schoolhouse, it is to be with one of them for something special. On Saturdays, you volunteer to babysit them. On Sundays, they crowd around you after church, and you're obviously delighted at the opportunity to spend a little more time with them. You fall asleep at night gazing at their adorable picture framed on the wall of them in their costume for dress-up day. Your bedside stand is cluttered with the stuff they gave you for Christmas. You never forget their birthdays, and the ones who land in the summer get cards with money right on time. And of all the wonderful children you teach, mine stand out as being just a little extra special. They are just a little cuter, just a little more mature for their age, and really quite talented. You manage to make my daughter shine like a star at the program, even though she can't carry a tune in a wheelbarrow. You somehow make a math champion out of my son, even though I myself still do subtraction on my fingers. My children are never involved in anything negative at school. They never seem to misbehave. In fact, you can't imagine what school would be like without them. When they show up with a crash of the lunch pail a half hour early in the morning because Dad's on his way to work, it makes your day, and you have a little easy checking for them that they can help you with. Plus, of course, you wanted to share a little of your coffee with them. And no, you're not worried about their germs in the least, even though whooping cough is going around. And speaking of sick, you never seem to get sick, and when you do, you somehow manage to keep going at nearly the same pace with a smile on your face. When my child needs to stay an hour after school because Mom had a doctor's appointment, that makes your day even better, and you manage to sneak out to the playground for a quick game of some kind after you've shared your secret stash of chocolate. You are the fountain of knowledge and wisdom. It is common for the men in the community to call for help in solving an angle problem in their construction project. The women regularly call with questions about homework or needing just the right word for the poem they are writing, all of which, you, of course, is at the tip of your tongue. You've been known to counsel teenagers with fantastic results. It's rumored you're writing a book in your spare time. In spite of never leaving the school property, you manage to keep up with a healthy balance of social life, although if you're single, you wouldn't think of dating anyone because that might distract you from your passion for teaching. in summer, you might go home for a quick visit only to come back and immerse yourself in some job you've managed to come up with. You perform so well at it that your employer wonders how he will do without you when you get back to school. You gladly work for minimum wage and also volunteer to forego the summer half wages the school will offer you since you're getting cheap housing. And even though your annual gross income is less than the older boys at school make in their summer jobs, you manage to keep... That resonated, didn't it? You manage to keep all your bills paid and drive a fairly nice car, which is always clean. You're serious-minded, yet fun to be around, outgoing without a trace of overbearing, intelligent and tech-savvy without being geeky. You rarely volunteer your opinion, yet is often sought. Your appearance is always neat and tidy without being too starched. You always look tanned, even though you never have time to go outside. Your class trips are always well-timed to counteract the winter doldrums, and they are always memorable events, which the children end up talking about for years afterward, even though there is no place in the state they haven't been to 3 times. Your art projects are truly works of art that end up being family heirlooms after they've graced the walls of the schoolhouse. You have the ability to make history spellbinding, math intriguing, English simple. You are always ahead of the curve, never caught unprepared. You have developed the proverbial eyes in the back of your head to the point your students are convinced those eyes are also telescopic. You read their thoughts. You always know whether they are prepared for a test and always have extra time for a little tutoring on their weak areas. You always manage to keep them caught up with their work, even though we've pulled them out for random vacations and birthday trips so many times you wonder if we've read the school handbook. You manage the delicate balance of communication with parents and school boards so well that we are all convinced that we are doing an excellent job of staying on top of things. You are able to convince the school board their input is invaluable to you, even though none of them has ever taught a day in their life. You are good at sports, and it seems to rub off on my children, even though they started out not knowing the difference between a volleyball and a tennis racket. And finally, you always, always hit a home run at the school picnic. In short, we ask you to do the impossible. And we are astonished that more often than not, you actually pull most of it off. We are amazed and humbled that you even try, and we love you for it. Thank you for choosing to teach.
Good afternoon. I've written this mostly for teachers, as it appears to me that the ratio of teachers to parents is somewhat lopsided here. I want you to be able to recognize the perfect parent when you see it. So here goes, the perfect parent. You walk into the house after school and are greeted by the warm, soothing scent of freshly baked chocolate chip cookies. Your greedy little eyes roam the countertops, dip over the table, and finally settle on the cookie jar. As you begin to pry open the lid, the thought crosses your mind that perhaps there was some leftover cookie dough left in the fridge. You switch targets, homing in on the mixing bowl gleaming in the dim refrigerator light. You dip into the perfectly chilled, sugary bowl and help yourself to perfection. A raisin! The cookie is ruined! In disgust, you empty your mouth, washing it out with a cup of whatever happens to be handy. Probably just tap water. You shudder as you think about the perfection that was ruined by the simple addition of a morsel of sun-dried fruit. Of course, some would even argue that by baking cookie dough, you have altered the cookie so that it can no longer attain absolute perfection. Thankfully, with or without raisins, you seldom have to bake parents to bring them to perfection. As a matter of fact, I would argue that most parents are closer to perfection than you think. This is a bit of a strange direction for me to go with this talk, My original intent was to compare perfect parents to mythical monsters, like the Loch Ness Monster or unicorns or Bigfoot. You know, the type of thing you can find in a book or documentary, but have a 1 in 7 billion chance of seeing in real life. The more I thought about it, though, the more I realized that I was picking the raisins out of my own students' parents, and deep down inside, for the most part, I had decided that the issues at hand were not large enough to even mention to the culprits, and had only let them irk me a bit as I spent time after school studying, or more likely, an after-school conversation with my co-teachers. Merriam-Webster defines the word perfect in a few different ways. Number one, being entirely without fault or defect, and number two, satisfying all requirements. Truthfully, I now realize that I've been spending way too much time looking for the parents that have no faults or defects. Maybe I need to spend more time being thankful for the excellent parents that I have working with me. Do my parents satisfy all the requirements that are expected of them? Probably. Therefore, I'm thankful for parents who love their children. The large majority of our students, as opposed to the world around us, are fortunate to have loving, God-fearing parents. We do not often have to deal with neglect or abuse. I'm thankful to have parents who will not undermine my authority. Most of the parents I work with value my opinion, have very similar goals for the students' education, and encourage me as I attempt to educate their children in the worldview we all embrace. This is a wonderful privilege. I'm thankful for parents who value my time. Most parents try very hard not to schedule appointments during school hours. This is actually a matter of discussion among teachers, in case you are wondering. And when we run across a midterm, one-week-long vacation, we do get a little miffed. It is a fact, though, that most parents try not to blindside us with these sorts of surprises. So here is my first bit of advice to parents. Give teachers time to prepare for students who will be gone. My second piece of advice to both parties is to get parental involvement in the classroom, both parents and teachers. I don't know if all teachers enjoy this. I expect not. But I think it's important for parents to come to school and sit through classes. As teachers, we should encourage this kind of behavior. If you, as a parent, find something or someone interesting, share it with the teacher. Teachers appreciate free show and tell. Even if you just come and sit through a class, feel free to ask your children what the most interesting class is. I know that I greatly appreciate it. School needs to be a community effort, and as such, parental input is necessary to keep the establishment running on an even keel. Finally, a necessary, though not always fun, attribute of a perfect parent is communication with your teacher. Speaking from experience here, a large quantity of teachers will address only the most pressing issue. The most pressing issue is often the child with the biggest need emotionally or physically. Because of the way that the human mind works, the largest problem takes most of the teacher's focus, and smaller issues will fall away into the periphery. This is another reason to sit in classes. It can help you see issues that you may never otherwise get a glimpse of. It may also help you as teachers to see issues that you previously overlooked. The reason for this, of course, is that you do get a little more self-conscious when you have observers. That's fine. Self-consciousness is not all bad. I have never met the perfect parent, nor do I expect to. Someone will not communicate, and someone will leave on a trip with 2 hours to prepare your students for the week they'll be gone, and someday, more than likely, you will be faced with an unappreciative set of ancestors. Strive to understand the flaws and work with the people who own them, rather than picking at what you perceive to be the wrinkled, dried grapes that somehow worked their way into your little mouthful of perfection. Someday you will require the same benevolence.
The perfect board member. The perfect board member shows up after school every Friday for a staff meeting. As the teachers discuss newfangled ideas, He sits in open-mouthed awe at the sage wisdom displayed. When asked for his blessing on their latest strategy, he responds, "If you can understand all those big words you just used, then sure, go ahead."
We as a board are so privileged to have such talented instructors managing our school. Could we please give each of you a raise? How much do you need to be able to replace those clunkers in the parking lot anyway? We feel it shows misplaced priorities when our mini barn builders earn more and drive bigger trucks than our teachers. We have discussed your performance this year, and in light of your hard work, we want to send you to Europe next summer so that you can experience our history and geography firsthand. As an extra reward, we'll be sending Brother T.J. Bear as your tour guide. The perfect board member walks into the cramped library and exclaims, "These books are looking rather well-worn. Shouldn't we replace the worst of them? And see to it that our school library is up to date. Oh, and have we discussed the latest improvements in curriculum?" After a thorough discussion in the library, he pauses to assure. I shook hands with and encouraged each of the seventh graders who were struggling in algebra. We want students to learn these important skills. Are they doing well? Good. We are also working with that father who started the unfair rumor about the first grade teacher spanking his son without reason. Within reason, we as a board have thoroughly spanked him. He will hand in a paper of restitution on which he has written, "I will not disrespect the teacher 500 times. While some teachers may think that it would be grand to have such board members, it could hardly be safe, and I hope it never happens. To illustrate this, I'll tell a short story about two board members named Tom and Tim who were flying through the Amazon jungle with their teachers when the plane they were flying crashed. They all survived the crash landing. Tom leaped out of the plane with his machete and said, "Follow me!" And instantly began hacking his way through the jungle. But he had very little direction. He simply hacked through wherever was the easiest direction. And so he and his teachers that's where they went. Tim, on the other hand, said, "Let's pray about this situation." After prayer, he climbed a tree. And he looked around a little bit and he got down and he got his map out and he opened his map and said, "There's Mount Pogo's over there and the River Erb is over here. And if we follow the river, we're going to end up with civilization. It's not going to be easy, but that's the way out." Which board member would you rather have? There's three things that board members need to have. Number one is an awareness of where we are. How are you going to get that, board members? Show up at school. Bring a couple things with you, you know, when you do that. These are some things that my board members have showed up with. And you got to have something to eat to go along with what you drink. Show up when the classrooms are in action. Stay with us for a recess. And observe the way the co-teachers are getting along with each other. Communicate with the parents and even with the students. And when it's time for parent-teachers meeting, ask specific questions. The standard board question, "Is everything going fine?" Good. Next. You're not going to find out very much, okay? Listen to what we're saying when we answer those questions. And not just the words we're saying, but the heart behind them. If there was a problem at the last meeting, bring it up. Ask us how things are going. Maintain a good set of records. Somebody mentioned the school's handbook. Know what's in there. Keep records of past meetings, of places that the school has gone for a field trip. Take a look at the report cards, achievement tests, and things the teachers are planning on using in the program. Those are things you need to know. I think the most important thing a school board member needs to have is a vision. You know, when that board member climbed a tree, everything changed. He knew where they were and he knew where they needed to go. Teachers feel confident when they have board members who are looking beyond right now and the problem we're facing at the moment. And board members, thank you for being stable. Be reserved when we show up with our wonderful ideas. Pray about them for a while before you give us an answer, even if we're chomping at the bit. I would like to share just a few things my board has done for me. One afternoon I was outside and one of them just drove in and dropped off a bottle of Kook. Kept going. My school board members have improved my teaching methods and corrected my personality a number of times. If you've enjoyed hearing me talk here, you can thank my board members, and one of them's here. My school board members have brought me coffee so many times, I can't count them. They have repeatedly given me raises, and twice at the end of a school term, they've given me a $1,000 bonus. My school board members have brought ice cream, cookies, cakes, donuts, and many other things to enrich our school. They show up for birthday parties. They're perfect for our school. I hope you get school board members that are perfect for yours.
The perfect student. As I attempted to build this stereotype, I only confused myself in considering all the nuances of this hypothetical being. So if you'll bear with me, I'd like to present four stereotypes for your consideration and allow you to choose for yourself. As you listen to them, try to perceive each one as a vessel partly filled, and try to envision the water level or fluid level where you think it should be. Stereotype number one, Noah. Shuffles in with bleary eyes, indicative of a late night. During math class, you review from yesterday. He can't remember how to change a mixed number into an improper fraction. You turn to the board and demonstrate. As you turn back, you ask, "Do you remember now?" You find him staring out the window, eyes glazed and mouth slightly open. After two more tries, you can finally get started on today's class, 15 minutes late. At first recess, he survives for a bit in the bump game and gets one person out before he is gotten out. When the second game starts, you find him kicking a ball around with one of the little room, but he cheerfully comes back to his game when you call him. He's still working on his math when you call to language class. He digs around in his desk for 2.5 minutes before stating that he thinks he must have left his language at home. You take another 6 minutes improvising before he gets started. During a dodgeball game, he keeps getting out when his ball is caught, so he resorts to throwing at first grader Lucas. He nails Lucas mid-stride and sends him sprawling. He seems regretful, and you see him talking to Lucas after the game. During story, he draws you a picture. You start a Jolly Rancher incentive that can be redeemed with a set of 90%. And while it saw great results with the rest of the class, it just doesn't seem to resonate with him. Sure, he stares longingly when one of the others is awarded their candy, but no matter how easy you make it for him, he just can't seem to conjure up any effort. During science, though, he's riveted, correctly telling the class what osmosis is during review, and he crowds up close during the experiment. He even offers to wipe up the water that spilled. At the end of the day, he stays behind and tells you a story about his dog and the squirrel he caught. You have to remind him that his ride is waiting for him. He gathers his homework and trudges out to his ride. Olivia. Pays attention even when we're studying pronoun cases. But she's a little quick to tell people when it should be I instead of me. Half of the circles on the bookworm have her name with titles like The Scarlet Letter and Through Gates of Splendor. You have to tell her not to start on her music till class, even though she's done with all her other work by 11:45. She's been able to sing alto since third grade. However, when soprano needs help on the new song, she can carry it strongly. She's never late for school. In fact, she rarely arrives after 8:40. She's even nice enough to stay and discuss the virtues of Jim Elliot with you while you cram for your weekly sword drill. She's a solid asset on the playground and quick to comfort Lucas when he skins his knee. She's the first one picked in volleyball, but for some reason you see the boys exchanging satisfied glances when she's eliminated in bump and dodgeball. Liam is content as long as his grades are somewhere in the 80s. He has contributed only one circle in the bookworm, but for some reason he voluntarily memorized Casey at the bat. He easily dominates the bump games, and his team smiles in anticipation when he steps up to bat in softball. But in the dodgeball game, he directs his shots away from Lucas. It even looked like he stepped in front of the returning fire from Lucas and then complimented his good shot. But when fourth grader Oliver called Lucas a baby for crying over a skinned knee, Liam pointed out across the playground, "Oh, at least he doesn't wet his pants like you did at that age, followed by a fastball at Oliver's head. When the Jolly Ranchers appeared, his math grades rose overnight, but when the candy ran out, so did the B pluses. He always gripes over reading class and can't remember his vocabulary words to save his life. But when studying poetry mechanics, he had a hilarious parody, which you read to your co-teachers, even took a picture of it for your family chat. After polishing out the misspellings in his story about every third word and dividing the continuous page of dialogue into paragraphs, you actually laughed out loud at the character's wit and were surprised with the plot twist at the end. Emma can't find her pencil again, so you loan her your last one. Then halfway through class, you confiscate it after telling her twice to stop working during class. When she gets it back, she whips it out in 10 minutes, and by first recess, she has only one part to do yet in her language. She's really a bona fide genius who speaks three languages and is working on a fourth. That's counting Pig Latin and Opengloppish. And is even working on a book of knock-knock jokes she wrote herself. During the bump game, she was the first one out, and even though Liam let her bump his ball twice before draining a swisher from the three-point line, she got out and informed you that she'll go play Beckon with the little room. You inform her that she'll join the next game. In the next game, you can't tell if she totally missed the backboard on purpose or not, but Noah is behind her, and he frantically eliminates her. At 11:30, she kindly tells you that she has a dentist appointment and needs to leave at 2:15 during science, for which you stayed up late, preparing an experiment demonstrating osmosis, of which she is still clueless. Maybe if half the time spent doodling in the margins of her notebook went into looking for answers, she would know by now. At lunch, she shares a piece of her licorice saltwater taffy and reiterates of her dreams of owning her own taffy store someday. 5 minutes into the dodgeball game, you notice Emma is missing. You find her inside playing carpet ball. She drags her feet out to the playground, but during the game, she somehow manages to be the third to last one out. And when she's hit, two people tell her, "Good try." So as you consider each of these examples, or whatever version of them you will have, remember that each of these vessels has two parts, both the part that's filled and the part that's empty at the top. And as a teacher, you're the one holding a pitcher, and you've been called to pour and fill, not to consume. So I'll defer answering this question to each of your experiences. As you stand in the classroom to which God has called you, ask yourself the question, who is the perfect student for me today?